If you want some, come get some.
Be in if you can. Survive if I let you.
You and I, we are going to fight.
I love to fight.
You're here. I'm here. Let's do this!
Just bring it, bitch!
It's collaborating!
Right, hello and welcome to episode 18 of Kings in the Ring. This one's got a different feel. I'm Marcus Farrell, for those who don't know. Every now and again I join in with John and MB to be the Seth, to their Taz and Tanae. They usually refer to me as Rymark, but I'm dropping that gimmick. I'm going back to my original, which was the Marcus piece, Chris Marcus.
Good work.
Hopefully you hear my music then. This one is a special episode. It's going to be a wrestle fight episode. And what this is going to be is basically your two hosts of Kings of the Ring will be going head to head.
By the way, I'm John Cooper.
I'm Steve Emerson.
They will be going head to head on a series of questions set by myself. Basically, they'll be arguing their point and I will judge, like, it's completely unbiased and it's just based on the strength of their argument. Who gets the point? There'll be 8 questions of the normal wrestle fight, and then we'll go on to a speed round where I'll ask a question, they have to answer straight away, and they don't know the question in advance. So,
lovely.
Are we ready?
Yeah. Are we ready?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, let's crack on. Yeah, fine, no problem.
Right, we'll go straight into the...
Oh, wait, hang on, one thing quickly. Just if anyone did try and listen to the Shawn Michaels podcast, which sounded horrific... we are going to re-record that at some point because basically I recorded with 2 microphones and ballsed up the recording.
But yeah, we will look to redo that one. Obviously, it's an important one on the timeline, so we'll have to get back to it at some point. Hopefully, that'll be with you in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's it. So either way, back to the, our guest host, the third man. Marcus Farrell.
Thank you very much.
No worries.
Right, straight into the first question. The first question will be, is the WWE enjoyable to watch at present? First up will be Envy.
Well, I never make any bones about this. I believe it is enjoyable to watch. And I'll give you... one reason to start off with, and that's probably all I'm going to need, and that reason is Seth Rollins. The man basically carries the show on his own currently and makes it every week entertaining, obviously with help from people like Ambrose, even Reigns I'm finding entertaining at the moment. That's even without including someone like Lesnar. You've got the fact that Cena's open challenge has been interesting to see some of the people that have come out and especially has brought in now the NXT stars into it. I think the show in general, obviously, look, it's 3 hours long. There's going to be some fluff bits. But overall, I watch Raw and I probably skip a lot less of Raw now than I was doing 3 years ago.
Good points. Good points.
So it's over to me then. Well, this was a difficult one because to be honest with you, Envy got in there first. I'm going to say no, and I have got some reasons why. Reason one, the main event is still dependent on Kane being there to interfere. He's got no need to be around the main event at the moment. The tag team division was showcased at Elimination Chamber, how terrible it is. The Divas division, a lot of IWC guys come out with the whole give Divas a chance, and WWE's answer to that is, oh, we'll give them an extra few minutes without actually backing it up story-wise. Also, current product, the WWE is pretty much pre-ejaculation. Now, let me just quickly explain what I mean by that. This week on Raw, good Raw, by the way, I'm not going to slate the Raw at all, but obviously it was a Roman Reigns show. Roman Reigns versus Wade Barrett. Wade Barrett, King of the Ring. 5-6 years ago, if someone won King of the Ring, they'd probably be getting pushed towards the main event. He's still jobbing. Mark Henry, World's Strongest Man. Well, you know, he's always just been there or thereabouts. Typical big man there to hurt him, does his job, whatever. Then, they blow their load quickly by putting the first Reigns versus Wyatt match on Raw when there's money on the table in that at a pay-per-view. This is why the current product isn't great, because they haven't got patience to tell the stories.
I would like to say 5 or 6 years ago, the King of Ring wasn't around, just to clarify. So they weren't pushing for main event after winning the King of Ring 5 or 6 years ago, because it wasn't one about. Also, the Reigns versus Wyatt thing, unfortunately, as much as people won't like to admit it, Wyatt's nowhere near the main event. So Reigns, you're not blowing your load on it, because in 3 years' time, you may have that rivalry revisited when Wyatt works his way up the card. I would say, to your point of... Hang on, I've lost where I am now. Sorry, mate. No, go on, carry on now. I've forgotten. I'll get back to it in a second. I'll remember it in a second.
Yeah, but I see what you're saying. You're right, Wyatt isn't anywhere near a main event. If I'm completely honest with you, I don't think Dean Ambrose is near a main event. He's just nearer than Wyatt at the moment. That's personal opinion here. If he, but
I've got it.
Hang on, his rebound clothesline annoys me as much as the Hell's Gate annoyed you.
That's a lot then.
At Elimination Chamber, in that main event, I text Marcus. He must have done that about 5, 6, 7 times. Don't get me wrong, I like Ambrose. The character, he's entertaining. But pushing him as another Steve Austin isn't good.
But they're not. Again, I don't think they are. This is going back to the point that I just remembered. The fact you said about Kane being near the main event. The reason Kane's near the main event, and I think it works, is because they're using the great old storyline of a heel champion who is very beatable, and it's actually elevating someone like Dean Ambrose into another level and actually into a genuine bona fide main event superstar without people even really realizing that's happening, because he's fighting against a vulnerable heel. And it could be Kane, it could be anyone. You could have anyone in Kane's position, but they are just being utilised. A bit like Tom Coe with Christian Cage in TNA, and that's a weird reference. But when Christian was the champion in TNA, he always had Tom Coe as his fullback, so he would look like the chicken shit heel.
Emmy, hang on, I don't mean to interrupt your comment, mate.
Yeah.
I think you might be running out of reception because you're breaking up a bit.
I've got full reception, so...
Oh, okay. All right. No, it's fine. Sorry, carry on.
Right, if I could interject quickly...
Yeah.
We'll just try and wrap this question up. I think we've steered away from the question a little bit, just based on the fact you both seem to be focusing on the title picture at the moment and focusing on...
Okay, all I'll say, for example, with Kane being up the top, you said about Tyson Tomko in TNA with Christian.
Yeah.
Tyson Tomko was still an up-and-coming performer in the business. Whether he was going to make it to the top or not is a complete different question. But Kane has been around for a long time. At the Royal Rumble, the final four, it come down to Rusev, Reigns, Future, Kane, Big Show, been there too long, have no right to be near that event.
I don't disagree with that.
The Cena US Open Challenge has been great. Absolutely. It's probably the best thing about Raw. I'll be completely honest with you. I really agree with you. Rollins as champion, it's great. We haven't had a proper chicken shit heel champion for ages. I think, as I say, with the blowing the load thing, with Reigns and Wyatt, I agree, Wyatt isn't a main eventer, but they still are big enough characters to keep them away from each other. So if in a year's time he's closer, you then give him a first match on pay-per-view. The problem with the current product today, because of the three-hour format, is that matches that have got money on the table are being wasted just to fill time. For example, 2002, Austin walked out on WWE because Vince McMahon wanted him to lose to Brock Lesnar in a qualifying match. Steve Austin turned around and said, no, I'm not doing it. There's money on the table. That caused him to walk out. The problem is, with the way that things are getting booked today, there is no build-up of anticipation for two people facing each other. It just happens too quick.
Cool. Rebuttal, MB, and then we'll wrap this up.
Yeah. I think you're putting Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns into a caliber there they're never going to be. You've likened them to Austin and Lesnar, which is ridiculous. I think overall, if you watch all 3 hours, you've got entertainment, comedy, quality wrestling, and I think what you've got the main thing, and harping back to it, you've got a main event picture which is interesting to watch currently, which we have not had for a long, long time.
I genuinely think
you watch the three hours, and as my main point was, you skip a lot less now than you did 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Even when Punk was his best, the overall show now is more entertaining than it was then.
But you're still skipping part of
the
show.
Well, it's done.
Yeah, but you would have skipped through.
The buzz has gone. Some great points raised by both competitors in that one. I like John's analogy with having like the golden oldies, shall we say, of like Kane and Big Show still around the title picture. I think you're calling for a change. You want up and comers in spots like
exactly.
that. Like yep. I use a Luke Harper in that position instead of a Kane.
Yeah,
I get that. MB, great point about the fact that how often, like I can speak for myself, how often I used to skip through Raws, but I find myself watching more and more of Raws in their entirety at the moment. The Divas division, as John pointed out, he said obviously the hashtag Give Divas a Chance started. I think they are trying. They are trying.
That's going to take time, that.
Yeah. Obviously. Like we want it to get to the level of where it is at NXT, but it's going to take time because, obviously, it's models first that go on to Raw, wrestlers second.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. It will get there. I think I'm going to go with MB on the first round, just based on the fact he pointed out the skippability factor.
Yes.
Boom. Yeah, no, if I'm completely honest, when I got told to say no, it was going to be hard. I had to try and scrape.
Yeah, that's the problem. That is good. That is what makes this good, is the fact you've done well to argue a point which you probably didn't necessarily.
Yeah, no, very, very good round from John. Okay, so ready to move on to round number two?
Go for it, yeah.
Let's go.
Right, question number two. If WWE could sign anyone from another company, who would it be and why? We started with MB on the last round, so this round we'll start with John.
I'm not even going to go with a wrestler on this one. I didn't even get a chance to even bring this up with the current product, but a lot of people's gripes, wrestling in total, or even someone positive about the product like MB, will still sit there and say about announcing isn't up to scratch. This is why I would bring in someone whose knowledge of the wrestling business is near enough second to none. I'd bring in Mike Tenay.
Impressive. MB?
I've got plenty of rebuttals for that. I would bring in, again, I wouldn't just go for a wrestler. I would bring in the whole of the Bullet Club.
It's
in going with how the WWE is moving forward, the Bullet Club could be used as a phenomenal storyline, not only in NXT, but also in the main roster, especially with Finn being close to the title picture in NXT. If you brought the Bullet Club into NXT to get him over that hump as a top heel, which would then turn cool, because that's what exactly what would happen. That would be the way that they get the title off of Kevin Owens and send Owens onto the main roster. You would have the Bullet Club come in, help Finn become the champion, very similar to their storyline over in Japan. And then from then, you can progress the Bullet Club in NXT, be dominant, and then come onto the main roster and do the same thing, infiltrate the main roster and really take over. Because you're not only getting AJ Styles in that, you're getting the Young Guns who could revitalize the tag team division. You're also getting Carl Anderson as well, who I think is phenomenal.
Yeah, good shout.
It's to be honest, very good call. Bullet Club coming to WWE will be great, but the thing is, with bringing wrestlers in, it's all well and good because they would add to the product, but the product is good enough without them at the moment, whereas the announcing is said on a weekly basis by all three of us, it isn't. And at the end of the day, Michael Cole, we've all got our opinion on him. Booker T, let's be honest, he shouldn't be anywhere near a commentary table. JBL peaked a couple of years ago, he's now getting worse. I think the whole thing with the announcing and why I bring Mike Tanay in is because he actually brings more of a realistic view of what's going on in the ring. He knows, if you watch him in WCW, even TNA, his homework he does on every performer, everything that goes on, it's phenomenal. There's a reason he's called the Professor. It's because of his knowledge. His knowledge is brilliant. Now, the Bullet Club, as you said the Young Bucks, you said AJ Styles, you said Carl Anderson, all definitely could add to it, 100%. But at the same time, it's more people that can improve something and make it cooler, whereas with Mike Tanay, it's adding something to improve a weakness in WWE's product right now.
Can I just deliver the knockout blow and say that Mike Tanay hasn't commentated on TNA for 2 years, so even TNA don't use him anymore.
Yes, but that's because, let's be honest, TNA's management isn't the greatest. Like, that's,
it doesn't, irrelevant. If they've got someone as good as you're saying in there who...
WWE hasn't used JR for 2-3 years. That doesn't mean that JR's not still the best announcer that's ever lived. And that's, still that's currently is not the best.
Mike Tanay still works for TNA, they just don't use him on camera. He's used behind the scenes. I mean, there's reasons for that, and I just don't... I think you're going backwards if you bring in someone like Tanay. Tanay is... I don't know his age. Marcus might be able to tell me, but I'd say, what, mid-60s?
Yeah, you've got to
coming
be
up past that?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want an old dog like that commentating, thanks. Even JR I wouldn't want to bring back. So...
Yes, and I can see what you're saying, but at the end of the day, I would rather have an old dog back than sit there listening to Michael Cole, Booker T, JBL, Michael Cole, to be honest. Jerry
Lawler. I'd get rid of Booker T, but yeah, I don't mind Michael Cole.
This is the thing though, as you say, you're right, he hasn't been on camera in TNA for 2 years, but JR hasn't been commentating for years. You would still sit there tomorrow if he came back to WWE and be overwhelmingly happy because he's the best commentator of all time.
But Mike Tanay was never in the league.
Mike Tanay never got the opportunity at a decent level. If he got given the opportunity, I think the view on Mike Tanay would be completely different.
Mike Tanay was the commentator for WCW during its hottest run ever when they were the biggest show on TV.
And if it wasn't for him, genuinely, that commentary team, you wouldn't want to listen to them. He brought a legitimacy to a company that had no legitimacy.
Yeah,
if you watch in a couple of weeks, I'll send you over a match, Benoit, Bret Hart, Mike Tanay's research, everything he says in that match is brilliant. Personally, for me, I'm not a fan of sports entertainment, I'm a fan of pro wrestling. Mike Tanay is a pro wrestling commentator. That's fine.
You can't put a square peg into a round hole, sir.
Right, I'm going to wrap that one up there. Oh, that one got a little bit heated. No, that is enjoyable. Again, good points raised by both. The Bullet Club, I would really be interested to see how they get on, but MB isn't going to like this, but I'm going to go with John on this round.
Yes!
Yep.
And I will explain my reasons for going with John on this one. As John quoted during his rant. He said the commentary is currently an issue in WWE. Getting in another commentator who is better than what we've got currently would improve. Bullet Club would be adding to what is already good.
Yeah, so, I can understand that.
So yeah, that point stuck out in my mind, so I'm going with John on that round.
Yes! 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 Yes!
Fair play.
Come to WWE, Mr. Professor.
Get in touch. Actually, you might have to get a shovel to dig him up. But I'll give it
actually, you know what? Get Seth in. Get Seth.
I'd rather Josh Matthews than Mike tonight.
Really? Wow. Yeah. That's a big call.
Right, that's another argument for another time. Right, round three. Right. Question is, who had the worst gimmick in WWE history? And we are going to start with John.
Let's be honest. It was a faction during the Attitude Era. It was a faction of jobbers. It was a faction of people that were never, ever going to get near the main event. That faction was RTC Right to Censor.
Oh, what? Oh, I'm going to town.
MB?
Mine is the right answer. It's Lord Tensai.
Because you just made me think of one now.
They built him up to be this absolute monster. And he rocks up onto Raw looking like a Muppet. And he didn't instill anything into anyone. The problem is Prince Albert is Prince Albert. We're always going to know him as that. And I always find it, I always think it's very tough to repackage someone who had been such a big part of the product in a certain mold,
yeah,
and then repackage them into something completely different, the other side of the world different.
Yeah, if I could just butt in on that.
Yeah.
It wasn't a repackage. He was working as Tensai in Japan. And it went over in Japan, but it didn't quite translate.
That's what I mean. It's a different gimmick that he used from when he was... He used a different gimmick over in Japan than he used in WWE. Mm-hmm. And then he came back and used that same gimmick that got him over in Japan in WWE. But a lot of people would have seen it as a repackaging. I know he was huge over in Japan because of his hard-hitting style, which is fair enough. But the fact is, that gimmick was the worst one that we have seen on TV in my lifetime, anyway.
Honourable mention for Mordecai.
Yeah, I don't remember Mordecai, so. But to say Right to Censor is ridiculous.
Right, John, your reasons?
The reason I picked Right to Censor is you can't polish a turd, to be perfectly honest with you. Godfather, Bull Buchanan, Val Venus, well, maybe not so much Val Venus, Stevie Richards, Ivory, were turd. You can polish them up, you can put them in a white shirt, you can put them in a black tie, you can try and change the gimmick, a gimmick which they stole from ECW, by the way. Just want to point that out, as Cyrus was doing it a few months before and in another gimmick stolen by them. They've gone with Right to Censor. The other annoying thing, just to quickly go out of that, when you said Lord Tensai, I thought of Kenzo Suzuki, and I'm really annoyed that I didn't fucking go with that. But back to it, Right to Censor, obviously they did their job because they made me annoyed. They annoyed me to the fact that I hated them. But on the other side of things, with Lord Tensai, like you're saying, is at the end of the day, he built up a reputation in Japan. They brought him back over here. His first month, he main evented and beat Cena on Raw, I believe. And he was doing fine until they'd stuck him with a Funkasaurus.
It doesn't matter. No, he wasn't doing fine until he stuck him It doesn't. You can beat Cena if you want, but if you beat him and there's crickets, then there's no point. The fact is that Right to Censor were booed out of every building they walked into. That gimmick got over. there's absolutely no doubt and no shadow of a doubt that that gimmick got over. They were booed by everyone. Every single person that walked into that arena hated them. And no one gave a shit about Lord Tensai. That's the epitome of what a bad gimmick is. If no one gives a shit.
I'll give you that. But on the other, on putting the shoe on the other foot, MB, me and you have spoken on podcast before about the fact that Cena's never ever changed up his gimmick. So is it not better to at least try something new than stick with the same stale?
That's quite an irrelevant point because he's always been over in one way or another. He always gets a reaction. Fact is, Lord Tensai just didn't get a reaction at all. No one cared.
All right. Gonna wrap that one up now.
If I haven't won that,
in fairness, you should have won that because at the moment you said Lord Tensai, all I thought about was Kenzo Suzuki, so I was more
ragging. Yeah, that would have been an interesting competition.
that would have been a contest. I'm afraid it wasn't even a contest, really.
Right,
to Tensai, they've done their jobs perfectly as heels.
Yeah.
They got booed. MB's completely right.
Yeah.
Especially for that era, because obviously WWE would geniuses with Right to Censor, because they managed to get it from the disgusting product, I loved it, but the Attitude Era product, which was so out there, into more of a kids watching program, through basically them being the ones doing it for them. That was what's ridiculous about it. I mean, I mentioned it on the AE podcast, that how they managed to utilize this gimmick to move them into a more watchable product.
Yeah, no, it was smart on WWE's part. If it's not obvious to the listeners, MB won that round.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Right, round four. Question being, most cringeworthy segment produced by WWE. And we will start with MB.
I think I've got a winner straight away. The most cringeworthy segment had the most almighty build-up. And then we've got every single wrestler surrounding the ring, the chairman of the board in the ring, to find out who his illegitimate son is. And then they announce, through a load of cryptic shit clues, that he's going to be either Triple H or Ken Kennedy. And no, it's neither of them. It's Hornswoggle. Now, who the hell wrote that TV? Was it just to try and play on the fact that Triple H was married to Stephanie in real life, but no one really wanted to? They were sort of joking around with it on TV, so he wanted to be a bit funny and say about he's shagging his sister. I don't know, but whatever it was, it didn't work. It was cringe to the nth degree.
Do you know what? One, I'll give you that. Another thing as well, I've heard that once Vince McMahon wanted to do an incest storyline with Stephanie McMahon, and if that had happened, that would probably be my rebuttal. But What I'm actually gonna come back with, MB, is probably a bit before your time, Mr. 1998. We're gonna go back to, I believe it was Survivor Series 1990. Now, after months of build up and months of seeing a giant egg, what was gonna come out of this hatched egg? Well, I'll tell you what, MB, it was the gobbledygooker. And then after that section, after that happens and it's hatched at Survivor Series, which, you know, as far as pointless segments at a pay-per-view, not much gets worse than this. He then goes into the ring to get interviewed by Mean Gene, which he gobbles a fair bit. I believe he even dry humps Mean Gene as well.
He does.
And then runs off. And then that character gets a few months shelf life in WWE and then disappears until he comes back at WrestleMania 17 for the gimmick battle royal and gets thrown out in 5 seconds. The Survivor Series moment when he got hatched, as a kid, I mean, I was 4, maybe, around my granddad's house occasionally watching wrestling, and I wanted to know what was in that egg. And when the gobbledygooker came out, as a 4 or 5 year old, a part of me died. Not as a 29 year old that I am now, which would just make me turn off the TV and go upstairs angry. I was 4 or 5, like, what the hell is that? And it actually put me off watching wrestling for a few years till 1994. I don't know whose genius idea that was, but that was terrible. The other thing as well, I just want to rebut to your one. As far as a Vince McMahon storyline goes, being a worse segment, I think him faking his own death is in there as well. Especially when a few days later, Benoit actually goes on a murderous rampage and he has to take it all back.
But yeah, it wasn't cringy at the time.
Do you not think?
No, not at the time. Not as bad as Hornswoggle.
It's a Benoit thing, by the way.
I don't remember anything from 1990. I'm not having you do either.
I can remember that. That's one of my early memories.
I remember that Survivor Series.
Oh, my God, honestly, Envy. In fact, go on the network and look at it just so I felt as a 4 or 5 year old kid.
I have seen the segment, but it's not as cringe as watching a little midget come out from underneath the ring and hug Vince's leg whilst he pretends to think that his illegitimate son is this lad. It's just... And they have no excuse, really, in that day and age for that bad television. Like, that is dreadful in that day and age. At least in 1990, there was some shit on the telly, wasn't there? Let's be honest.
I don't know what you're talking about. Baywatch used to be on. Gladiators. There was lots of good stuff
And
on.
Go back and watch any of those episodes and tell me they're not fucking cringe.
Right, we're going to wrap that round up there.
Supermarket Sweep hadn't even debuted by then.
How do you know when Supermarket Sweep debuted?
I don't know. I'm guessing.
I'm going to put a little theme in there.
Are you ready to go shopping? Step inside a very special supermarket. The only supermarket in the world that gives you money. £2,000 is waiting on our shelves to be won by some lucky person in this store. The aim of the game is to shop smarter and faster than the next person. And everything in this supermarket is up for grabs. Go on, fill your trolley as high as you can because shopping has never been so much fun. Yes, there's prizes in store and much, much more when you play Supermarket Sweep. So let's welcome today's shoppers who are... You're all on Supermarket Sweep. And here's your host, Dale Winton.
Good morning, teams.
Go. I can't believe Supermarket Sweep has made it onto this pod. Right. Again, both horrible, horrible segments in wrestling history. I'm going to give that round to Envy.
Yes! 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 Yes!
Based purely on the fact, as he said, when Vince said that Hornswoggle, he come out that Hornswoggle was his illegitimate son, there was so many viewers.
Yeah.
For them to lose that at that time, that makes it even worse for me.
Yeah.
As opposed to 1990 when we should have been.
It could have been a decent thing, to be fair, because you'd believe that Vince would have slept around. And especially in his younger days, it could have actually been a good angle, but no.
I can't believe you're tarring Vince with that brush. He loves Linda. Right, round 5. Right, we'll go straight into it. The best wrestler never to hold a major title, and that will be WWE Championship or World Title. We will start with John.
It's a simple one for me. Obviously, the fact that his career ended the way it did as well is a bit of a travesty for me as a wrestling fan because he was one of the reasons that made me watch wrestling. It's Owen Hart. And the reason I say Owen Hart is even even in his era, like, he stood out so much more than the top guys that he used to wrestle around with him. Obviously, it helped that his first major rivalry was with his brother Bret Hart, who at the time could get a decent match out of a broomstick. But he was really good. He was good on the mic. He was charismatic. He was great in the ring. And I think it's a travesty that in the years he was in WWE, people like Diesel got a run with the title. People like Yokozuna, Psycho Sid and stuff. And I just think the fact that he's overlooked with how great a talent he was, it's a shame. And that's why I go with Owen Hart.
MB?
I mean, Owen's a good one, and you can't really deny that he probably deserved to hold one, and he may well have done if he lived longer. But my one is built on a respect that's probably been garnered over a long, long, long time. My one is Goldust.
Okay.
And I think that he is such an underrated wrestler that has managed to keep his gimmick and keep reinventing himself, keep going with a similar sort of gimmick the whole time, but keep his wrestling at such a level that even now people talk about how great a worker he is. He was unbelievably entertaining during the Attitude Era. He had great storylines in the mid-card, but never really got above it. And then he managed to make a comeback in the last sort of 4 or 5 years and be spotless in the ring. And him and his brother managed to revitalise for a little while the tag team division. He is a great worker that had a great gimmick and should have got some sort of run with one of the world titles. If he'd gone to WCW at the time they were just before they got big, I think he might have had a chance, but WWE, unfortunately, he was never going to get a chance to do it.
Okay. Have you got a rebuttal against Goldust?
Well, I have. I mean, first thing, I do agree with you that he is a great worker, especially now. But he was very hit and miss throughout the Attitude Era. And the problem I have with Goldust being a world champion has nothing to do with what he's like in the ring. It's the fact... I mean, he left the WWE during the Attitude Era to go to WCW. I can't remember what the gimmick was, but I'm sure you've probably seen the shoot promo where he was basically meant to be their version of The Undertaker, I believe. And I think the thing that's always held him back is he never fought his corner. Some will say that's a model employee, but for someone with his talent, I feel he should have been able to push himself forward to get them title shots. And I also think the reason that he stayed in the mid-card for as long as he has done is because his character is a mid-carder. That is not a main eventer.
What I will say is the question isn't who is the best wrestler to not hold a world title. The question is who is the best sports entertainer to not hold a world title. And Goldust epitomises sports entertainment. That'll be my last point.
Yeah, I'll give you that, but at the same time, sports entertainment wrestler, either way, is the best person to never hold that title, and at the end of the day, Owen Hart has more of a reason to be that world champion than Goldust ever did. I know Goldust's career has been going for ages, I know the last few years of his career have been great, but he was very hit and miss, especially during 98-99. He wasn't that great. He had his problems, and it showed in the ring. At the end of the day, 1996, when he first came in and he had his little rivalry with Undertaker, he then saddled it by having his match with Roddy Piper. And unfortunately, he let Vince McMahon tarnish that character, and he was never going to get above the level he was at. However good he was, however much of a great sports entertainer he was always going to be tarnished with a mid-card act because he was a mid-card character. That'll be my last thing.
Right, what you're saying there is exactly what Owen Hart did as well. He will always be remembered as a mid-carder. And unfortunately, we think about him more fondly because of his death, but the fact is he was always a mid-carder. Goldust was so much more entertaining on numerous occasions. Rowdy Roddy Piper thing, it was entertaining, which you can say. Him and Booker T, unbelievably entertaining. Then you had all the stuff during the Attitude Era when there was sort of the hint that he was part of GTV. I mean, I just think that there was a lot of strings to his bow.
Owen Hart, King of Hearts, great gimmick. Owen Hart, Blackheart, great gimmick, was pushing towards the main event. Owen Hart commentating on King of the Ring, absolutely entertaining. Filled in for Jerry Lawler, and you didn't even notice Jerry Lawler was missing in an era where you would notice he was missing.
You'd never know Owen Hart, Jerry Lawler was missing.
But this is what I'm saying. Owen Hart, at the end of the day, was entertaining. Yes, he was a great wrestler, but he was a great sports entertainer. Go back and watch the segment in 1997 when Brett stops Bulldog and Owen fighting each other to get them all together to build the Hart Foundation. When Owen Hart's bottom lip goes like a two-year-old child trying not to cry, it is one of the most entertaining and funny things you'll watch. Owen Hart was a great entertainer. Yes, you're right. Since his death, everyone talks about how great a wrestler he was, but they also forget how great a sports entertainer he was as well.
Okay.
Right, wrapping it up there. Wrapping that one up there. Again, two good answers. Love the fact that MB went with Goldust as his choice.
That's a great choice.
I've got a lot of time for Goldust, especially with the fact that a lot of people probably won't realise he helped mould Stone Cold Steve Austin. They had a program together in WCW. They were working.
Dustin Reynolds. Yeah.
As Dustin Reynolds, when he came over to WWE as the ringmaster. Mm. I think his first proper program was against Goldust. So Goldust, great in ring, entertaining as always. Owen Hart, fantastic wrestler. You made a great few points there. I'm not sure if he would have become champion under the Blue Blazer gimmick, but as you said, King of Hearts, Owen Hart, that was money right there. He was known all over the world, worked in Japan, so on and so forth. I'm going to give that round to John. I just think Owen Hart would have been a better fit. He was a household name as well.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows the Hart family. If he had a world title strap on him, it would have made sense. So Cooper wins that round.
Well, one quick thing. This isn't obviously to do with the wrestling fights. WWE is doing an Owen Hart DVD, aren't they?
Are they? I didn't know.
I think so, but it's one of them because the Hart family is massive. Half of them don't want it to happen and half do. But I feel something needs to be put out there about Owen Hart, to be honest.
Yeah, and Goldust as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm a bit gutted as well. By the way, on the Goldust point, I'm a bit gutted that WWE didn't hold out the Stardust program just for an extra month and give him his send-off at WrestleMania this year.
So, I still think that might happen next year with a dramatic build-up. Because if they'd done it here, it wouldn't have been that dramatic. I think that they'll build to something. Maybe a return for Goldust at the Rumble. Stardust eliminates him by hook or crook or something, and it'll be more of an emotional build-up. I think they'll get their Mania match, I think.
Right. Moving on. Round six. Right. Question is, who is the most overrated wrestler of all time? And we start with MB.
There's one answer only. Hulk Hogan. It might be because I was late to the party, again, as John mentioned many a times, didn't start watching wrestling until 98. But I saw
1998.
I watched all of WCW, I watched all of WWE, I've seen a lot of Hogan matches, and I've gone back and watched pretty much every big Hogan match there possibly is. The bloke couldn't wrestle, right? Okay, they managed to jump on the superhero bandwagon, and that's what they built him as. But to put him up there with some of the greats, to me, is weird. It's weird. I just don't get it.
I'm going to be very honest, Envy. I love the fact that you picked Hulk Hogan because all three of us completely agree with that one. I don't know if this is completely out of left field who I've gone with. But let me just quickly give you a backstory. People claim that he's one of the best talkers to ever be in the business. People claim that he was a great workhorse in the business. The man went 17 years without taking a pinfall until WrestleMania 8. He was used as Hulk Hogan's foil when WrestleMania first went up. I've gone with Rowdy Roddy Piper. Now, as far as someone that can't wrestle, we've both got valid arguments here. Roddy Piper couldn't wrestle, neither could Hulk Hogan. It actually annoys me so much when people turn around and say Roddy Piper is a great talker, because I've sat and watched enough promos of his, and I can probably pick 4 words out of a 15-minute promo that I actually understand. Again, how the hell someone as talentless as him went 17 years without having his shoulders pinned to the mat or take a submission is beyond me. I know, obviously, you can talk about the 80s and territories or whatever, but Roddy Piper, I know there's a good argument he wasn't seen as a face of a company, but he's still referred to as one of the greats. The fact that he's referred to one of the greats annoys me massively.
I think you're completely right in what you're saying. We're obviously going to get a lot of heat for what we're saying for the rest of the period. But the best way I can look at it, obviously people in America may not understand. Well, they probably will. I'll put it into 2 analogies. Mm-hmm. One for English, one for American fans. In England, when we watch clips of Diego Maradona, Pelé, Eusebio, you can tell they were great footballers. And even if they were put into this day and age now, you know that they'd be able to compete, right? They might not be the best, but they would be able to compete in American football. If you put Joe Montana, Dan Marino into American football games now as quarterbacks, they would be able to compete. They might not be as good as a Tom Brady or as somebody like that, as Peyton Manning, but they would be able to compete. The fact is that if Hulk Hogan was put into NXT as a young wrestler, he wouldn't get anywhere at all. Now, if he was brought into the business right this second, plopped into NXT with his character, with the way he wrestles, with his wrestling ability, with his talking ability, he would get nowhere. And that is the epitome of an overrated wrestler. He got lucky. He rode the bandwagon of what wrestling needed at the time, right? People might say he was a pioneer. The fact is, wrestling got popular not because of Hulk Hogan, but because Vince McMahon brought it into the public eye and made it into a sports entertainment company building on from there. Vince McMahon is the reason why Hulk Hogan was popular. That could have been absolutely anyone in that position, and Hulk Hogan is dreadful.
Yeah, again, I completely agree with everything you've just said. I mean, I'm trying to think of the perfect analogy with Piper, again, to use it as an English one. If you spoke about football currently, I mean, you two have said before about Frank Ribery being overrated. That's what I put Piper in. He is spoke about with such high regard in wrestling circles by people that, let's be honest, we both sit there and we listen to and we think, oh, do you know what, they're great. You know, for example, Jericho praises him, you know, fucking Austin's praised him, JR's praised him, a lot of people praise Piper, and I cannot physically get my head around his praise. The fact that he was the top heel in WWE for a good 6-7 years astounds me, because he just, like, I don't know what he brings to the table. He's not good in the ring. He's not a great talker, which disgusts me when he gets put in the same bracket as people like Cactus Jack, for example, Mick Foley, Austin. He's nowhere near that level. He has rode the wave of hitting a coconut on Jimmy Snooker's head.
The best thing about Hogan, Jericho says it in his podcast numerous times, if you watch Hogan versus Rock with the sound off, it's the worst wrestling match of all time.
Mm.
And this is the problem, is Hogan's Sin, but he's just seen as this cult figure, and that is all he is, he's a cult figure. But the fact is, he could be anyone, and if anything, if there was someone with a better wrestling ability, Hulk Hogan would have pioneered the business even better.
Okay, all right, we'll wrap that one up there. Great arguments. You've both picked two wrestlers who I hate with a passion. Piper accomplished nothing, and he's a Hall of Famer.
Never a world champion, either, was he, Piper?
No, never. A world champion. Hence why it brings me to the back. Envy's going to take that round.
Yes! 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 Yes!
Yeah. Based on the fact, Hogan, he's so decorated in the industry, and it sickens me the fact that he's been given the title of Mr. Wrestling. This guy, pioneered wrestling for the world. He's like, again, as MB said, though, that was Vince McMahon. He's just pointed the finger and said, cheer him.
Yeah.
But it was Vince who got the deal with syndication.
Basically, Hogan got to where he was because he was in Rocky III, and he was a bodybuilder with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Vince McMahon was like, there's someone who's connected to the mainstream. We're going to put him, everything Envy said is absolutely spot on. The other thing that annoys me about Hogan, before we go to the next question, is the fact that he's talking about having a retirement match at next year's WrestleMania. Grow old with dignity, you bald fuck.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm pretty sure he's touched his daughter while she sleeps.
So, hang on, his wife or his daughter?
Same thing. So I'll move on before we get sued by someone. Right, round seven. Right, question being, what was the best heel stroke face turn of all time? We will start with John.
It's a pretty simple one for me. It's what kickstarted the Attitude Era. It's what kickstarted probably the greatest career in professional wrestling. It's also what kickstarted the downfall of probably one of the greatest professional wrestlers that ever lived. It was in a city where the fans chose who they wanted to back, not the people behind the curtain. The moment Bret Hart put the sharpshooter on Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13 and Austin didn't give up, it is the greatest double switch, babyface heel turn, whatever you want to call it. It is still, to this day, one of the greatest moments wrestling has ever seen, and look at the wave that the WWE rode off the back of that. Some people would obviously say the Montreal Screwjob had a bit of a factor. I would say this moment, because if this moment doesn't happen the way it happens, Steve Austin's journey might have been that little bit longer, and by then they was losing quite badly to WCW. This moment essentially changed the wrestling business forever.
MB?
I've got some things to say about that, but I'll give you mine first of all. Mine is one that really swerved, one of the first real ones that swerved me as a kid when I was watching, and it was the Deadly Game Survivor Series and the Corporate Champ. They fucking destroyed my dreams that turn. I didn't see that coming at all. Worst thing was, I was in Florida at the time, so I was watching it at a reasonably normal time, didn't have to stay up late or anything for it. I was out in America at that point, and all of a sudden, The Rock does what he does, sides with the McMahons, and I was like, what the fuck is this? He had just got so much momentum as a babyface, and was becoming the biggest babyface in the company. They picked the perfect moment to turn that. Absolutely spot on perfect. And it is what made The Rock who he is today. Because we got to see him, rather than become stale as a babyface, and we got to see him really go into his character as a heel. And I think that pioneered the fact of how WWE would carry on and then go and destroy WCW, because obviously with Austin they turned the table equals. With Rock, they won it.
Do you know what? To be honest, I'm glad that you did pick the Deadly Game one, because I find it brilliant that we've essentially picked the two people who had the rivalry that essentially defines pro wrestling. Whatever rivalry has ever happened in wrestling, you always will compare it to Austin and Rock.
Yeah, 100%.
And the thing is, as I say, with Brett and Austin, Bret Hart, essentially, at that point, he'd done everything he could to be, in Austin's word, a white meat babyface at WrestleMania 13. The fans just wanted to back Steve Austin. And it's the first time in wrestling, let's be honest, Hogan, hand-picked, like you said in the last round. Bret Hart, hand-picked. Shawn Michaels, hand-picked. Austin might have got there, because obviously he had his whole 316 promo, which started him on that pace. But that night, that moment, your hero was born in front of you. And he wasn't just a hero as in, he's going to come out and slap people's hands. No, he was the anti-hero that professional wrestling needed. Paul Heyman in 2004, in an interview, he said when he started ECW, he looked at it as basically WWE and WCW were rock and roll of the 70s, where it was all a bit happy, and then you needed grunge music to come along and change the industry. From that moment, that created the opportunity for wrestling fans to see someone like Steve Austin, the anti-hero, go on and take over the business. That moment for me, that heel turn, that babyface turn, defined wrestling for me. As great as the Deadly Game 1 was, nothing will ever compare to this moment in wrestling.
I understand what you're saying, but a point of a heel or a face turn for me is the shock part of it. Now, leading up to that Mania, Austin was getting a 50-50 reaction, and that's conservative. You could argue in certain places he was a face over a heel, but they were still pushing him as being a heel. I think they got their hand, rather than the fact, because a great heel or face turn, as much as you don't want to admit it, is written in the story. And the Rock turn at Survivor Series had obviously been planned for quite a few months. Whereas I think the Austin turn was, we can't fight this anymore. Which is nice. It's a nice moment. And it's a lovely moment in wrestling. It's one of those moments that you will say change the industry. But for just what we're talking about with a face or a heel turn, no one saw that coming. I mean, obviously there might be some smarks at that age. But when I was 14, 13, 14, I did not see that coming whatsoever. And I was so angry. So angry. And it brought out that emotion. The difference is, the Hart Austin one wouldn't have brought out as much emotion. It would have brought out more of, right, we like this bloke now. We really want to go forward. Because Hart, after that night, wasn't completely hated. It wasn't a turn. It wasn't Bret Hart being completely white meat babyface walking into that pay-per-view. Austin being a dirty heel and then doing a flip on the night. They'd already been changing positions as they went on. And even after that night, Hart wasn't really a massive heel, was he? He was just getting a slight mixed reaction in places.
No, well, I'll disagree with that, because in America, Bret Hart was hated after that. When he went to Canada, anywhere in Europe, he was loved. So I see what you're saying with obviously the 50-50 thing. But he was a heel. And the thing is, as great, again, the Deadly Game is a brilliant one to call. But in the same instance, I felt the exact same when Austin turned on Rock at WrestleMania 17. It's the same dynamic. Nothing has ever made me feel how Austin made me feel when he didn't give up. Because the other thing as well, in wrestling at that point, no one was really protected from never giving up. That's what made it such a big moment. It was like when you went to see The Dark Knight Rises and Batman didn't give up despite the fact that he was getting beaten, battered and bruised by Bane. It was that emotion.
But then, just like The Dark Knight Rises, this moment falls quite short of other things. So,
all right, I'm going to wrap that one up now. Two great answers. points made were valid from both of you. What's standing out to me from the discussion between yourselves? WrestleMania 13 for me. Obviously, that moment is revisited time and time again. Obviously, the image of Austin blood streaming down his face, obviously, that went on to be one of his best-selling T-shirts, just that image. Like, never say die attitude. Mm-hmm. Without that moment, like, obviously, that was the birth of Austin. You wouldn't have a CM Punk who comes in and does what he done to the industry.
You wouldn't
obviously.
Have had a Cena when he first came in. You wouldn't have had correct. A lot of guys.
Correct.
You wouldn't have had Orton.
Correct. But...
Mm.
But the corporate chat scenario, that, yeah, comparing the two, because WrestleMania 13, the best way I can explain it, WrestleMania 13, when that match finished, it wasn't as clear as day. Like, it didn't, nothing said, right, you now cheer him and you now boo him. That would have happened in the weeks afterwards. That would have taken a promo on the next Raw, like a promo on Heat or whatever.
That
would have taken a gradual build. When The Rock sided with a corporation, that was an instant heel turn. Everyone knew, you now boo this guy.
Yeah,
we don't care how much you love this guy, he's a bad guy now. And yeah, I'm going with Envy on that one. Just for the shock factor.
Yeah.
Yes! 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 Yes!
Cheers! I was pretty confident in that one because, yeah, I completely agree with you. The Austin... part thing is phenomenal, but just as a heel or face turn, the corporate champ thing just evokes so much emotion. And as Marcus said, the next night, everyone booed him out of the building.
As I say, I'm quite glad you went with that one. In all honesty, I weren't sure what you was going to go with. I like the fact that the pair of us have essentially, we picked the two defining moments of probably the two greatest. Arguably two of the greatest superstars that have ever been, and definitely the two. As you say, I think the point where you nailed it on the head was Austin started winning over WCW, but The Rock was the one that beat him. I think that was... When you said that, I instantly was like, I don't know how I'm going to come back with that. So, I agree with that completely.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, we're moving on to the last round of the standard wrestle fights. This is round 8. And we're finishing with, quite simply, what is the greatest match of all time? And we will start with MB.
God, this was so hard. There were so many. Like, obviously, things like the Triangle Ladder match at Mania, I could have gone with, like, phenomenal. Like, you, as a wrestling fan, I hadn't seen anything like that at the time. Absolutely nothing. But what I'm going to go with is a match that came in a tough era of wrestling, but brought everyone back to watch it, and brought every wrestling fan back to watching the product and thinking, oh my God, this is why I loved wrestling. And they followed it up with a match that was nailed on perfect, and that is CM Punk versus John Cena at Money in the Bank 2011, I believe it is. That whole thing was brilliantly told as a storyline. Yes, okay, they might have got lucky and fallen into the storyline because of actual real-life scenarios, but that's what made it better. And then you got to the actual event, and you had one of the most almighty pops I've ever heard in my life. You had a bloke getting booed out of the building like I've never heard in my life. So all of a sudden, straight away, you've got the perfect chemistry for a match. And then they both went out there. And as much as Cena gets slated, he has had some of the best matches in the last 10, 15 years by a country mile. And this was the best. CM Punk, okay, he might have brought it out of him. But they have phenomenal chemistry, these two. Absolutely phenomenal. You could put them up against each other tomorrow in a car park and they steal the show. The fact is that match from bell to bell was a perfectly told story. And I think the ending with Vince being down there, and I like the ending with the fact of Cena doing what he would always do. He was trying to be honest to the end. There is one small thing that I would change, as I said on the podcast that we had, that I would have let it go an extra 30 seconds, minute longer after Cena punches Laurinaitis. But still, flawless match, really. Pretty much flawless.
Okay.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Right, over to you, John.
Before I say my match, I'd just like to go back to that same podcast when Envy was going to give that match 7.5 out of 10. And I've just got leg cramp. I was going to give it 7.5 out of 10 had it have not been for the crowd, because the amount of botches that happened in that match. That's just the first thing I'm going to point out before I even mention my match. So everything that Envy's just spewed there is utter crap. And he just couldn't think of an answer, so he came up with the one that will get the IWC on his side. Yeah, I'm flipping that round on you. Now, leg cramp aside, which kills right now, I went with a pretty obvious one. Now, we've all said before that the obvious choice isn't always necessarily the bad choice. I went with The Undertaker, Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 25. Now, the build up to it was, it was all pretty simple. It was all, you know, Michaels had just won his freedom back off of JBL, and he wanted to celebrate that fact by taking on the streak. The streak pretty much took on a reputation all by itself. Now, we've all discussed this before, that The Undertaker was very hit and miss. We all knew that Michaels would get a good match out of him, but I don't think anyone knew how good a match this was going to be. To the fact that WrestleMania 26 a year later, when they had a rematch, if you didn't have WrestleMania 25, that's a phenomenal match. But because you do, it seems like an average match in comparison. Yes, you had the botch with the cameraman, but every false finish mattered. The crowd at WrestleMania that year came unglued. And to be honest, I was always adamant and stubborn that nothing was ever going to beat Angle Lesnar at WrestleMania 19 until this match came along. And when this match happened, when it ended, as a wrestling fan, I've never been able to sit back and think, wow, that is the best thing I've ever watched. Like, you always expect something better. Even to this day, there's been some great matches since. And don't get me wrong, MB, I love CM Punk versus John Cena at Money in the Bank. I can remember texting you during the match whilst it was happening, saying how good it was. But as far as the best match that ever take place, it's got to be Undertaker Shawn Michaels, because technically it's brilliant. And when it comes to reviewing that match, I know I'll give it 9 out of 10 because it's that good. I won't sit there and go, oh, I was close to giving it a 7.5, but the crowd brought me back in to give me an 8.
I think I gave it more than an 8.
You didn't.
Did I not?
Nope.
Anyway, from the reason that I've chosen it is how the perfect story was told throughout the whole build-up to the match, through the storyline, and then the match itself. When you couple it all together, that's what makes a match isn't just built in the ring; it's built beforehand as well. Because you have everything come into it, and it means more to you in that moment. In that moment, once you're watching the match, you've had all the build-up to it, it means more. But I will say that even your botch that you said about with Michael's Undertaker didn't even seem like a botch.
Exactly. So, no, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, I won't lie. I'm pretty much conceding, but I would say that Michael's, if I knew you'd pick that one, so I had to try and pick something else.
Right, I think we can wrap that one up here.
Yeah.
Right. I don't even think I need to give reasons, really.
No,
nothing fine. Against Punk versus Cena. For me personally, Punk Lesnar was better than Punk Cena.
I think just the story beforehand, I think, makes
yeah.
it
yeah, story, that little bit story
more. But Undertaker Michaels is the greatest match of all time. Let's all be honest.
Yeah. It's a given. John wins every.
Yes! 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 Yes!
I'm quite glad I got there first, to be perfectly honest, because yeah. I would have been in the same situation as you. I'm just glad that you picked a match that you didn't slate on the podcast, but you did pretty much say.
I was being
for the crowd. I would have given it a 7.5, which is a pretty average rating for a match, really. But
I'm
yeah.
pretty sure I gave 8.5, but I don't remember.
right. Just having a look at the scores. We got right, it currently stands. John has won 1, 2, 3 rounds. 3 rounds out of the 8. Leaving MB winning 5-3 currently. But John, you can pull it back.
How?
Oh, I'll tell you how, John. Ladies and gentlemen, we now go to the Wrestle Fight speed round.
Is this like the lightning round?
Yeah, you get a point if you shout Google.
Is there a hopping bonus?
Why, certainly.
Let's play bamboozle!
Really should have called this bamboozle. Right, the rules for the following round.
I have a wicked wango card, please.
Right.
This is the best game ever!
Do you want the rules?
It's too much quoting of Friends.
Yeah, I know, we've got a bit mad, haven't we?
We done?
Oh, come on!
Super speedy speed round.
Is there a hopping bonus?
Of course. Who invented bifocals?
Ben Franklin.
Correct. Which monarch has ruled Great Britain the longest?
Queen Victoria.
Correct again. But you forgot to switch legs between
no.
questions.
Oh.
So no hopping bonus.
Oh, every time.
Yeah. Now, over to Chandler.
I'd like a Google card.
Are you sure?
Yes. No. Google.
Oh, my God. Congratulations, Ross, because Chandler... You've been bamboozled!
No! This is the best game ever!
Yeah.
Right, we're gonna finish off with this speed round. Basically, there's another 8 questions.
Fuck.
But all that happens is, I ask a question, both of you shout out at the same time the answer.
Right.
If you both say the same answer, whoever says it first will get the point.
Gotcha.
If you say different answers, I will give you basically 30 seconds to explain why you're right and the other person's wrong.
Go.
Right.
Yeah, good.
Right. We're going to start this off. Cue speed round music. Right. Question 1. Best high flyer?
Rey Mysterio.
Jeff Hardy.
Envy?
Jeff Hardy, just because... I mean, he was a world champion for a lot longer. He's done it. He was a world champion in multiple companies, and he was moreover than Rey Mysterio ever was. The only reason Rey Mysterio got to where he was because of Eddie Guerrero.
John,
Rey Mysterio got to where he was because he was a great performer. You're an idiot who just can't seem to see that. The reason Jeff Hardy has been a champion in other places is he went to somewhere like TNA, which was. Let's be honest, if Rey Mysterio walks in there, he would have got the title as well. Rey Mysterio has a great body of work going right the way back from Mexico all the way through to Mexico again.
Right, background, barring the botch at the end, I'm going with John on that one. Rey Mysterio is better than Jeff Hardy.
Do, 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 do.
Round 2.
So.
Barring John Cena, best John in wrestling.
John Morrison.
John Bradshaw Life.
John, back it up.
The long yoga.
John, back it up.
I can't, you said the best.
Right. Every face round two.
The longest reigning SmackDown champion in TV history.
Do you know what? I can't believe that I just hummed JBL's music and then I forgot about John Bradshaw Layfield when he asked that question.
You went with John Morrison.
I'd rather rather John Laurinaitis.
Yeah, better answer.
My man Blake.
Right, cool. All right. Question three. Best tag team.
Edge and Christian.
Dudley Boys.
MB, back it up.
Edge and Christian were obviously phenomenal in the ring. You've got two world champions. But then as a tag team, most charismatic I think we've ever seen, arguably. They were so entertaining. So entertaining. 5 second pose.
John?
As great as the 5 second pose was, the 3D was just that little bit better. They've won titles everywhere they've been. Their career together, their longevity compared to the year and a half of Edge and Christian being together, pretty much states why the Dudleys are better. I love Edge and Christian, but the Dudleys, to me, is the best tag team that I've watched. Everyone talks about the Road Warriors, but as far as a career goes and what they've won, the Dudleys are far better than anyone that's ever competed in a wrestling ring.
Right, done. I will give that round to John. Title haul from the Dudleys is ridiculous.
Yeah,
sure. Right, round four. Best finishing move.
F5.
I've got to go against what I really, really, really want to say, but Adrian Neville's Red Arrow.
John?
F5 is the best finisher of all time because every time you see it, it looks impactful. He's done it on cruiserweights like Shannon Moore and made them do helicopters in the air. He's done it on Big Show. He's thrown Undertaker from his waist to his shoulders to do the finisher. Everyone loves an F5. Everyone would F5 their girlfriend if they could do it, or wife, because you know it's that great a move. Red Arrow, yeah, it's a bit impressive. It's a cruiserweight move. An F5 is a dominant move and it dominates professional wrestling. Go!
Andy?
You're just saying, basically said about his strength then. You've just gone on about how Lesnar is that strong that he could lift that Undertaker from his waist to do the F5. That's irrelevant. F5 is an okay move. It's a great move. But the fact is, if the person taking it doesn't sell it properly, it looks shit. The fact is, the Red Arrow will look phenomenal every time, and because there are probably about three people on the planet that could actually do it. It's a ridiculous move. I could do the F5 on you. And
no, you couldn't. You're a pussy.
But you could not. Nobody. Nobody. Very few people could do the Red Arrow.
Well, he shocked me there. I'm going with Envy on this.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, it's a valid point. Like, most people could do the F5. There's very few people who could do a Red Arrow.
No, I'll go with that. That's fine.
Right.
I almost couldn't remember the fucking name of it.
You wanted to go RKO though, didn't you?
Oh yeah, I wanted to go RKO a lot, but that would have been a losing effort.
Well, it's a diamond cutter, isn't it?
It's a nice crusher.
Right,
it's your bubble cutter.
Question five. Best entrance.
Triple H.
Oh, Jesus. I'll go with The Rock.
John?
Triple H's entrance, it's a spectacle in itself. Triple H's entrance, to this day, I still don't think anyone comes near to it. The Rock's entrance is pretty bog standard. He walks down the aisle and goes to the top rope and lifts his arm up. Triple H's entrance is intensity. It makes you geared up for the fight that he's about to get into. When you see him walk into a chamber in a Hell in a Cell, you're automatically pumped when Triple H's entrance happens. Triple H has the best entrance music. He has the best entrance tones. Everything about Triple H's entrance is the best. Go.
Wow, I cannot believe you've just argued that against The Rock. You just said he has the best entrance music. Wow. Against your boy. The Rock didn't need the frills or spills of the lights and things for Triple H and that stupid bottle of water. It is music hit if you smell, and the crowd erupt or boo, whichever way they wanted to do it. It was phenomenal, and that's why his entrance was best, because of the emotion it invoked every time. Every time.
Right, I'm scoring that one to John.
Yeah, agreed.
Nothing against the Rocks. I like watching a good Rock entrance, but I think Triple H, you know, it's a big fight feel anytime he comes to the top of the ramp. The music, it just goes well. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Question six. What's the best catchphrase?
You smell what The Rock is cooking.
Andy, you're not getting the speed of this speed round.
No, I know, but I it's
awesome. Referee.
I am awesome. I am the Miz, and I am awesome.
Andy, back it up.
The fact is that The Rock had but he had loads of other catchphrases that got him over. The fact is, The Miz got to the main event of WrestleMania with just one catchphrase, basically just one word, and that was awesome.
John, you've actually thrown me off on that one. Do you smell what The Rock is cooking? It's quite simply, it was the catchphrase that everyone wanted to sing along to, for example.
Along with other catchphrases.
And everyone loves The Rock's catchphrase, and everyone loves Do You Smell What The Rock Is Cooking? People would put their own name in and use it when they're saying it in any conversation. Do You Smell What The Rock Is Cooking is a great wrestling catchphrase. I'm awesome, I can't believe you picked that, as opposed to Austin 316, or That's the Bottom Line because Stone Cold said so. You went with Miz.
Because I'd be arguing the same point as you've just argued of something that was one thing that a wrestler would say all the time. Like, they'd say lots of different things. The fact is, that was his one and only catchphrase, and that got him to the main event.
Right. John wins.
Okay. You hate The Miz, that's why.
Everyone hates The Miz, MV. Actually, I found it's not too bad. It's quite entertaining.
Right, round 7. What was the best WrestleMania?
WrestleMania 19.
Shit. 17.
John, back out.
The reason I go with WrestleMania 19 was because every match, you wouldn't necessarily say it was a dream match, they were just great contests. Brock, Angle, yeah, I suppose it is a dream match, but it was two people at the same technical ability against each other. You had the final chapter of Rock, Austin. You had the first chapter of Jericho versus Michaels. You actually, even though no one really cares, you actually had the rivalry to finally put the dust under fucking Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan. Everything that could have happened at a WrestleMania happened at WrestleMania 19. I can't believe WrestleMania 20 didn't top it, and I can't believe it's taken 12 years to get with a WrestleMania that's even close to it. WrestleMania 19 is the best WrestleMania ever, and for some reason, Undertaker's streak was against Big Show and A-Train. That's probably the only detriment to that WrestleMania.
WrestleMania 17 had, barring the main event of WrestleMania 15, WrestleMania 17 had to follow up two dreadful, dreadful WrestleManias. Probably three if you want to include 14, because that wasn't the best. You just had Austin, the main event again there. You had three, I'm going to go with three bad WrestleManias before it. This one brought us back. We had, and this is all you needed, you had the Triangle Ladder Match, which was a show stealer on any WrestleMania, no matter what one you wanted. That was the pioneering effort of six men leaving everything out there. And you had Austin Rock again. I mean, those two matches alone sell you Mania.
But the reason that WrestleMania 19 is better...
You can't argue again.
You didn't need any gimmick matches to sell WrestleMania 19.
We're done. I didn't listen to any of that last bit. Right. Yeah, this isn't a biased thing happening at the moment, but John wins that round. I don't think you can class the WrestleMania as being better by having two good matches on the card. So, yeah, John wins that round.
I could have named more, but...
You didn't. Right, on to the last question for...
What's the score on the doors before the last question? I think it's level. Well, it's going to be close to level.
During this speed round, John has currently won 5. You've won 2.
Yeah.
So John's in front by 1 then.
Currently. On to the last question. Who is the greatest wrestler of all time?
Shawn Michaels.
Kurt Angle.
MB, back it up.
Shawn Michaels is the greatest of all time. If you have a top 10 matches of all time, Michaels probably has 7 of them. And that's not even an exaggeration. Right, you can forget, just because he wasn't a great talker, he was still a good talker, right? But his wrestling ability, his timing, his finisher, everything. He was a pioneer of wrestling as well. That's what people forget. The fact is that he bridged the gap. What people are doing now is what Shawn Michaels started.
Good. Done.
The reason I went with Kurt Angle is because his success hasn't just stayed necessarily in WWE. I know obviously WWE is the main product, but he's managed to go to TNA and he pretty much saved that company for a couple of years.
Hang on, shut up,
this is my point. He's in the ring, Angle is flawless. Everything he does is perfection. He's the best wrestler I've ever watched. He has matched pretty much a good match with anyone. He built John Cena, he built... Oh, do you know what? I've lost his frown. Give it
a... It was a valiant effort.
MB takes the final round. Meaning?
How are we level after all of this?
Because you've got Shawn Michaels in before me, you prick.
Right. I've got no more questions, so I'm going to make one up on the spot right now, because we can't leave on a draw.
Can't leave on a draw, no.
Don't worry, MB. We are going to fight, but it's going to be on my terms, not yours.
I'm intrigued to see. I think we'll change it up, though. I'd like to see Marcus versus one of us next time.
Whoever wins this one takes on Marcus. Up. Yeah, just do it that way, then. Yeah.
Okay.
And then obviously after that, whoever loses plays Marcus. And just...
Well, no, I think we could try and get some guests in. Maybe get Belmont, your mate James Belmont, in to do
yeah, get Mannings match. In. Give Mannings a go. That'd be entertaining. Yeah, cool.
Right, off the top of my head, this to decide it. Greatest manager of all time.
Paul Heyman.
John wins.
That was me! Oh, the delay on the Skype's done me.
I don't really know what to do. John said Paul Heyman, and then it took 2 seconds, and you said Paul Heyman.
I said Paul Heyman.
I've said it. It's all right now. The Skype's done me.
Well, no, I'll tell you what. Pick someone else if you want to argue it.
Okay. Jesus Christ. I bet he's sitting there with a smug look on his face.
No, he's not actually.
I'm fuming about this, Henry. You lost. There was no leg. You were just slow.
Definitely a leg.
You are
the greatest manager of all time. I'm going to go with Shane McMahon.
Back it up.
Right. Shane McMahon actually made the Big Show relevant, which is a feat in itself. He is arguably one of the best talkers. He wasn't just great as a manager though, he then got in the ring as well, so he could bump. So you had the fact that he would get chucked around by everyone. As Big Show's manager or other wrestlers that he managed during the time, he would bump around like nobody's business and help sell that person.
John?
Paul Heyman is the greatest manager of all time, because if you look at the wrestlers that he's associated with, it's the who's who of wrestling. Brock Lesnar, Punk, Austin, Mick Foley, he has been around all of them. On top of that, he could sell you into a building to watch Brock Lesnar versus a Dyson, because he's that good. After the Royal Rumble this year, when everyone was pissed off about Reigns winning, the moment they had that sit-down interview between Brock and Roman Reigns, half of the people that cancelled the network the night before actually wanted to see that match, because Paul Heyman is that good a talker. He's a good manager. He makes his clients look good. He makes the performers he's working with look good. He has got every attribute to be a good
manager. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, John wins.
Now that I've won for a second time, I'm going to go home and drink some milk and cookies.
It's true. I will face you again, and this time the lag will not do.
Wait, you can come down at some point.
Yeah,
and do it in person.
Come down. We'll do it face to face. Face to bloody face.
Right. That concludes the first
show. Well, cheers, Marcus. Thanks for that. Thanks for organising.
Yeah, no problem.
Well done on your win.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
MB, you can't see it, but John's shaking his head like Kurt Angle at the moment.
and hopefully you'll have to send this on to your mate Nick Mundy, Faz, and see, because he loves his wrestling and obviously is a pioneer of movie fights, so he might enjoy it.
Yeah, he's one of our best mates. So
he is one of your best mates, yeah. So by association. Basically, you're one of The Rock's best mates. So.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Right, that concludes the Wrestle Fights episode of Kings of the Ring. So, I've been the Marcus piece, Chris Marcus.
I'm the winner. John Cooper.
You couldn't think of anything intelligent to say. You're no Paul Heyman, that's the problem.
I don't need to be a Paul Heyman, I'm a winner.
And I will return stronger and quicker and will able to beat the lag next time, listeners. I will do it for you. Never give up.
Losing's never fun, MB. And if only you could see my hand right now, here's something to pick your spirits up. I'm flipping a bird just so you realise what's going on. on that note, just me and MB are going to be recording Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart soon. So just keep a lookout and we'll leave it at that. What music should we play out with? Is this going to be the WrestleFights theme that we're doing?
I reckon you should do the thing you put in for the start, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Cheers, right. Guys.
No, right. See you later.
See you later.
If you want some, come get some.
Be anything if you can survive if I let you.
You and I, we are going to fight.
I love to fight.
You're here. I'm here. Let's do this.
Just bring it.